I thought, in those desperate and forgotten days, of that passage in a novel I had read in school where the narrator insists that he prefers to be known as a reporter rather than as a journalist, the humbler word better denoting what he does, namely, transcribing what he sees. Today it's an even less dishonorable job description. I knew all the journalists in Hong Kong, of course, but I also knew a fair number of the reporters, the citizens trailing the city's movable war zones, often like me all alone, with a phone camera. And over time, I had become more comfortable among them without consciously knowing why. But then, what were we describing, and for whom? I wasn't sure about that either. For myself, perhaps, and a few others scattered across the globe, such as I like to imagine them, it would depend how deep you wanted to go into yourself. Some of these reporters had become strangely famous. They were unlike me in that respect. Although I had been in Hong Kong for more than 20 years, slaving away as a reporter factotum, gradually persevering his way into higher echelons of respectability, I had never made a name for myself in my adopted city. People knew me vaguely as a writer of something or other, and a fairly infamous glutton, but little more than that. I had gone there when still a young man, chilled to the marrow by London and its prospects, and more important, unable to see myself succeeding in that tomb of a city. I had arrived in Hong Kong just after the handover, knowing nobody except my old university friend, Jimmy Tang, and equipped only with a single suitcase and savings of 5,000 sterling. I had done well, given those inauspicious beginnings, but I had never become a star writer. And in a way, I didn't mind at all. I had worked for a variety of newspapers, enjoyed a stint as a restaurant critic, married and divorced, accumulated a small apartment, and perfected the Chinese I had studied at university. In other words, I was an excellent nonentity. In fact, at the beginning of that summer, when the disturbances had first erupted, I felt as though I were being woken from a deep and meaningless sleep. The city I had grown so used to, comfortable, cynical, overflowing with wine dinners and white truffle events, was shattered the first moment I saw one of my neighbors wander onto Java Road at midnight in a white sleeveless shirt, wielding a butcher's knife. I knew the man by face, if not by name, because I saw him every other day at Feng Xing, the restaurant on that same Java Road, where I spent much of my time drinking tea with Guan Tang Jiao, soupy dumplings, and editing my reports. I think he recognized me too, but I was invisible to him in that moment on the street at midnight because he was there looking for protesters to intimidate, and a Chinese civil war doesn't automatically include European drifters. Later, it was true, certain expatriated foreigners would indeed become local heroes in the conflict that consumed the city that summer, like the Frenchman with no legs who declared his solidarity with the students while standing precariously on his prostheses and orating to thrilling effect. I never found out his name, though I was resolved to buy him a drink if I ever saw him eating alone in a cheap restaurant. He was known merely as the Frenchman with no legs. As for the fellow knife-wielding diner at Feng Xing, I never knew his name either, but he would reappear like the ghost in a folktale, never losing his power to disquiet. He was one of the countless Fujianese immigrants concentrated in North Point, the neighborhood where I lived, which had long been a bastion of pro-Beijing nationalist sentiment. Still speaking Mandarin instead of Cantonese, they were an island among the sea of Hong Kongers, who otherwise barely noticed them. Their moment of vindicating the motherland had come, and when they achieved critical mass, as for example at Feng Xing at about 9 p.m., they acquired a belligerent confidence even as they were huddled around pots of tea and after-dinner donuts, a delicacy carried from table to table on sugary trays after the main courses had been served.